Kevin and I sit on a couple of various industry group boards, and we have for the past several years, almost on an annual basis, have had a discussion come up about a modification of the enacted 10-year tax abatement program. And the two of us have looked at each other and said, you know, we need to do something about this to try to find real data and look at something so that we don't have policymakers making statements that are really without findings behind them. So we looked at it, and I said that I had all the data for a community that was representative. It was not too high income level or not affordable level, but it was something that could be a representative of a revitalization effort of the city of Philadelphia of what we thought the 10-year tax abatement was intended to do. And ultimately, we came out with this report.
If you could tell me, Kevin, about how you what you did with the data.
Well, as John pointed out, we were really motivated by the fact that we wanted to help inform this debate. Opponents of the abatement say that, you know, the abatement is a tax break that takes away money from our schools and public services. Proponents will say no, it's a tax subsidy that helps promote development and hence expansion of our tax base, especially the critics, but a lot of people, I think, look at it, and if you think of it as a balance sheet, they only see the debit side of the ledger. They look at the abatement, they see, oh, that's a tax break that's given to, you know, mostly Center City wealthy condo owners and developers of yuppie townhouses in Northern Liberties. And, you know, I don't get anything for that. And moreover, I've been paying full freight on my taxes for years. What they don't realize is that there's a substantial amount to the credit side of that ledger. There's a lot of taxes associated with new development and new residents. So when the developer – and most people don't understand what amount that is. That's what we set out to exactly quantify. So, for example, when the developer acquires the site, he has to pay the 3% transfer tax on it. When he builds, he has to pay his contractors and vendors who have to pay business taxes, who have to pay wage taxes. They, in turn, spend money in the local economy, which generates sales tax revenues. Once the new residents move in, they purchase units, they pay transfer taxes. If they work in the city, which presumably they do, or even if they don't, they're living in the city, they're going to have to pay the wage tax. They spend money in the city. That generates further sales taxes. All these other taxes generate revenue for the city, and we actually went through step by step every taxable event and computed the tax revenue generated from every taxable event and then netted it against the total revenue foregone from the abatement. Long story short, we found that the cash-on-cash return was $2. That is, for every dollar that the city gives up in abated revenue, it gets $2 back in other revenues, so 100% return. That's in a case where I should point out you have new construction and you attract a lot of new residents. In the case of Brewerytown Square, approximately half of the residents were new to the city.
To add on to that, one aspect is also that would someone like ourselves do this project in a transitional area such as Brewerytown without the tax abatement? And I can, as the developer and the marketer of that community, can unequivocally say that we would not have done it. It was the key aspect of our marketing campaign and one of the key aspects of the decision of buyers to come to an area where they saw the potential for the area to increase and for their value to go up over time. I think that large-scale development such as what we embarked on in the mid-2000s with the Brewerytown Square community as the first phase was a huge catalyst to seeing that area revitalized. And we can't quantify exactly what those numbers are. I remember going there with realtors in the beginning and said, I'm never going to go. Nobody's ever going to go there. And we had people camping out overnight to buy homes in that community. The Girard Avenue corridor still needs more work but is light years ahead of where it was in 2002 when we first started.
And I would point out that even with the abatement, the project still generated more in property taxes alone than it did in its prior use as just vacant land.
And from a developer standpoint, I would say that we are not adverse to modification of the current law. We think that it is working well today as it is designed, but it has been bantered around in all sorts of different ways about what could be done, and all we wanted to do was independently was provide data that would allow people that are proponents or opponents who will ultimately make the policy decisions to have something to work with.
You'd like to see the abatement stay as is or even be extended, perhaps even further?
Well, I would love to see the abatement extended further for, you know, to promote more socially equitable type of development. I think that's something worth exploring. I would point out the real justification for the abatement is that, as I like to joke, Philadelphia has New York's construction costs, but we have Baltimore's rents and prices. The abatement helps bridge that gap. If that's the other underlying fundamental issue that Philadelphia needs to address. If Philadelphia is not willing to address that disparity, then it needs something else, you know, as a Band-Aid to make up the difference in the meantime, and the abatement works to do that.